BurgstudentInnen treffen auf spannende Persönlichkeiten im Rahmen der Bauhaus Study Rooms Dessau.
Burg Students Podcast Edition.
Bauhaus Study Rooms.
Today with Bauhaus Study Rooms.
So, hello everybody. Welcome to our special podcast edition where Hurrah Hurrah meets Bauhaus Study Rooms. During this editions, we talk to different people participating during the Bauhaus Study Rooms. And these Bauhaus Study Rooms was an event that have been taking place online during the first weekend of December, where design research activists and architects addressed to this year's theme, Habitat. My name is Verena and I'm currently studying design of playing and learning since about a year at Bogibichenstein Halle. And right now I'm sitting in our little pop-up studio being a bit nervous because I have a very special guest with me. It's the designer and I would also call her researcher Denisa Kolarova. She lives and works in Amsterdam where she graduated from Gerrit Rietveld Academy in 2013 as a graphic designer. And furthermore, she took part in the design research program at Bauhaus Dessau Foundation. And during the Bauhaus Study Rooms, beside creating the exhibition A Concrete for the Other Half, she talked about her ongoing research, and so do we in this podcast. Hello, Denisa. Good to have you here.
Hello, Verena. It's my pleasure to be part of this podcast. Hi, everyone.
I can see you, but the others can't, so maybe you can tell us, where are you right now?
Actually, I'm still sitting in Dessau in a Bauhaus building on the third floor in the current exhibition, which you mentioned, The Concrete for the Other Half. So I'm seated in the middle of that setting.
So you're still there. Great. I already mentioned your research. Maybe you can tell the audience a bit about it. What's the topic and how you came across with it?
It actually all started, as you mentioned, it was a part of my graduation project in the Rietveld Academy in 2013. And I started together with Anna van Linnen, and we became interested in playgrounds that we saw in Amsterdam cityscape. And at the time, we were not aware who was the designer of these play spaces. But soon we found out that it was Aldo van Eyck, and so that's the point that the research took and started to evolve from that moment in 2013. And it was a part of my graduation project, but I continued up till this point to research on playgrounds as a subject.
And what did you find out during your research?
So in the beginning, we were very much interested to find out what were the design thinking and ideas behind these play elements, and we were also specifically interested in this contrast of designing playgrounds. Like, basically we felt that there is a big gap between how playgrounds looked like and how they look like in a contemporary setting today. So we saw a big design change that happened maybe from 60s up till today, and we kind of wanted to understand why these old playgrounds are being replaced for the new structures that are very well known to us today as so-called, I call them catalog playgrounds. So for us, it was more of this first understanding of Aldo van Eyck playgrounds and what was the design thinking behind them and how large was the project. So a little bit of historical research, but also understanding the philosophies around it and trying to understand the contemporary view of the playgrounds today, and why they are designed as they are, and who are the designers of these play spaces today.
I would like to know a little bit more about, you call it the philosophy behind it. So maybe you can put it a little bit more in the historical context. You said they're designed in the 50s, 60s from Aldo van Eyck. How came that he designed them, and what was his idea about it?
Yeah, actually the story goes like really to the after-war period when the Amsterdam was going through the redevelopment, and a woman called Jacoba Mulder, she was working for the municipality of Amsterdam, and she was in charge of the parks and recreation areas of Amsterdam. And she basically observed, I would claim like that she came with a project, and she approached Aldo van Eyck because she observed children playing on the street without having special dedicated places for that. And at that point, we are talking about times when there were playgrounds in Amsterdam, but they were only private. So they were only for a membership and therefore for a higher class of citizens. But she wanted to create this project of playgrounds for all. And she decided to approach Aldo van Eyck as a person who could be the right one to try to do first one as an experiment, to design a first playground as an experiment. And from then on, the project naturally evolved and grew to a scale of 700 in Amsterdam. But that was from 1953, as it started with the first playground, to 1970s.
So probably not everybody knows Aldo van Eyck's playgrounds. Maybe you can describe a little bit more the way they're structured and what sort of material he uses and what sort of shapes, so that we can imagine them a little bit better.
He called them himself tools of imagination. And these tools of imagination, he used this term because he basically tried to design them as elementary as possible. And he claimed that when you have these elementary forms, then the child can imagine himself different kind of play that can take place on this element. So they are usually made out of aluminium, and they are different climbing frames, and they are, for example, domes, or I call them igloos, of different sizes and shapes. Then there are tumbling bars of different sizes, and then there are, and different compositions always. And then there are sand pits, they are usually quite large in scale, so many children can playing them together. And they came in shapes of triangle, circular, hexagonal, so basically quite a wide diversity of each play element. And then he combined those play elements in each playground differently. So the configurations always created a unique playground. I don't know if that really answers for the listeners how they look like, but I think, definitely they were not colorful, but their color was stemming from the materiality of those objects. And often they resemble street furniture, like a regular street furniture that you would see. This is the way they also merge with the cityscape very naturally.
So you would say that due to the material he chooses, like concrete and aluminium, they go very naturally with the environment around them?
Yeah, exactly. They are therefore they also are truly this kind of playgrounds for all generations, because they are not necessarily colorful spaces that would resemble a toy store and would be therefore understood as only spaces dedicated for children, but they are more of a public spaces in its true sense, and at the same time they are playgrounds, so they have a multiplicity of meanings, and you can understand them from different perspectives as a public space.
So you already mentioned the topic about the topic on community. So it played a role in the way they Aldo van Eyck designed these playgrounds. So what would you say? What was the role of parents, or what is the role of parents in this designed playgrounds by Aldo van Eyck?
At that time, as I mentioned, in 1953 was the first playground that was supposed to be a temporary experiment, and it was in the front of the house of Jacoba Mulder. But soon after that, citizens of Amsterdam, and therefore parents, they started to ask for playgrounds in their neighborhood. And it went very naturally that they were writing letters to the municipality and requested playgrounds for an area that they found like unused in the city of Amsterdam. So the role of parents was maybe more that they kind of communicated the need for playgrounds in that period to the city, and city was quite quick in implementing those playgrounds. Like, it was a very much a hands-on approach from the city and also from the citizens and parents. And maybe in contrast to today, the parents were maybe much more present on the playgrounds themselves. Like, there was no such a big issue around safety regulations at that point, because the priority was to have a playground in the first place. And so parents were often supervising children on the locations of playgrounds. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I would say that was the role of parents, importantly, that they requested these playgrounds.
Yeah, it answered the question, but I would also like to know if on the playground itself, how, the way it's structured? So does the parents have a good overview, or are they invited to play with them together? As you said, like the sandpits are quite big, so they probably can fit in as well. Do you have any observation about that topic?
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned, they were designed for all generations, and that means that they were basically considering the scale of the child, but at the same time also the scale and proportions for an adult. So, for example, the rim of a sandpit itself is large enough so even an adult can sit on it and supervise a child while the child is playing in a sandpit. Or Aldo van Eyck also designed benches in a certain kind of configuration in a nearby in the playground itself, so the mother could sit there and overview the whole play area while the child is playing, so she could like supervise a child in this way. So definitely Aldo van Eyck thought about the designs from perspective of a parent as well, not just from perspective of a child.
Oh, that's interesting. So, but did he also, or did kids also influence his way of designing? So did he work with kids? Do you know anything about that?
I just know that with his own daughter, Tess van Eyck, with who I was also in contact, she mentioned to us that they often went to play, like she went to play on these playgrounds herself. And Aldo van Eyck observed how children use the playgrounds after he designed them. And with many of the design elements, he even adjusted them after he saw how children use them, which I mean that, for example, the jumping stones that he firstly designed for the sand pits as a tables for children to play with sand, he later on understood that children are basically jumping from one to another, so he implemented it even outside of the sand pit itself and used them as they are used mostly today as jumping stones. So, yeah.
So we, as far as I understand, we have like mainly three different parts which are very recognizable for Aldo van Eyck's playground. So it's the sand pits, the big sand pits, it's the jumping stones, it's this aluminium gymnastic elements. Is there anything else, like a slide or a swing or something like this?
He pretty much didn't design any elements that would be in the movement. Like it's, he wanted more the child to move around the elements. So the elements themselves, they are quite static. So nothing like a swing was designed by Aldo van Eyck. Maybe the element we didn't mention was climbing mountain, which is kind of the most sculptural element that consists of blocks of concrete. And this element was meant to be to exercise some kind of a point of view for a child. So with each step the child took on that climbing mountain, he could observe a different perspective of the world, and challenge a little bit himself while climbing on a top. So, but there was never like a central top of that mountain, but it has several moments of. Like there, it's never hierarchical in that sense. Neither his configurations of playgrounds or play elements themselves. They are rather in relation to each other, and its design as well responds to that relativity concept.
And can you give us an imagination how these different parts are related to each other, and what's the scale of these different playgrounds, or are they all quite different, or is there something you can find on every playground?
Mm-hmm. There is definitely a change in terms of how these playgrounds look like maybe after 60s, because from the beginning these playgrounds were mainly implemented in the center of Amsterdam and the central areas, and these areas were different. They had always a different floor plan. Therefore, his reaction of design and configuration to that floor plan was always unique, in a sense that he could always treat each very much individually. But afterwards, when the playgrounds were implemented more in the new urban areas of Amsterdam, the playground was always dedicated to a certain floor plan of a square, so it was maybe much harder and definitely less attractive for a designer to invent a new composition for always the same floor plan of a playground. So there is a little bit less diversity in terms of how they are organized. In general, I wouldn't be able to say which elements are used the most or something like that, because they are really, truly, each of the playgrounds is unique. But he often, almost in every playground, included a sandpit. And he often started designing with positioning the sandpit first, but he never positioned it in the center of the play, play area. But he always offsetted it somewhere, and then in relation to that, he placed other elements. But there is I wouldn't be able to trace fully his recipe for that, but there is definitely a lot of thinking and a lot of his experience and readings from arts that played a role in this rhythm of how the play elements are organized in a composition.
You already mentioned at the beginning that that Aldo van Eyck designed about 700 playgrounds in the city. Are they still there, or are they gone, or what happened to them nowadays?
Actually, this is one of the reasons why we started also this research, because we saw that they are being replaced. And even in a year when we were doing, in 2013, when we started to be interested in the playgrounds and we started to work on a publication, by the end of the year, we already saw that some of the playgrounds we documented were demolished or replaced. And from a perspective of a designer and curiosity, we wanted to find out why is this happening, that they are being replaced or demolished. So we continued our research, and we often discovered that it has to do more with the safety regulations, because if the safety regulations changes the measure of distance between one, like bars on a play element, then suddenly you have to replace the whole playground or play element, which doesn't go along with these measures. So this is often the reason for these playgrounds to be removed. But in our research, we collaborated with the municipality of Amsterdam, and we were trying to achieve the fact that some of the playgrounds of Aldo van Eyck would be treated almost as a heritage, so they wouldn't be ever removed, because we couldn't imagine that they would disappear altogether. And it's quite hard for us also to estimate how many are still intact in a sense that they are in an original form as they were designed, because sometimes there is only one element replaced, but the rest stays. So it's not very, it's not that there is one way of replacing it. Sometimes they are completely demolished. But yeah, the safety regulations were the main reason for them to be replaced.
That's actually really a pity, because I think when I looked at the playgrounds from Aldo van Eyck, I think they are really, they stimulate the kids' fantasies, because they have like this minimalistic way of designing them. And so the kids have a lot of freedom to do what they want in this kind of playgrounds. And I think this is also very important when it comes to designing playgrounds. And they are not too descriptive. But if we think about a playground, when does it actually start? What would you say? What makes a playground a playground?
That's a nice question. I often think about it in terms of if it, because in my research I also focus on the appropriations of objects by children, meaning any objects in a streetscape. And what I observe is that to me a playground starts when there is this kind of a trigger for a child to start a game. So it can be as basic as a floor tiling in a city center that is a little bit different than the rest of the floor tiling, and the child is already capable of appropriating that space and inventing a game. So for me, if there is this space for imagination in any type of location that exists, that's when the playgrounds, in my definition, starts. So definitely it starts with any public space that is handled with some kind of a care of design. Or designed with care, that's what I would say.
I was actually wondering, or asking myself, can actually a playground be really designed, or can play be designed? Because I was thinking, okay, isn't, or especially when it comes to playground, isn't it rather an adult perspective? Building spaces for playing for kids so that they can be safe, because most parents are afraid that they play somewhere in the wildness and the free play is not really mentioned in the playground nowadays. What would you say? Can you really design play or a playground?
Yeah, I feel like you can design almost like props or theater set up for where the play can happen. Maybe you cannot, I don't agree that you have to design the game itself. I think you can give a means to a child to start his own game. And that means to me, that's something that I think it's an interesting challenge for a designer to find where, how much he has to do actually, because maybe it's sometimes less than we as a designers think we have to do. But it's definitely, for me, it starts with this almost like dedicating an area to play. It's almost for me also a role of a designer to do something like that. But then in terms of designing actual objects, I think, yeah, that's for every designer to answer how far we have to go. But I still think the role of a designer is quite necessary in that, because at the moment I wouldn't think of any other profession, a designer or architect or artist, but I don't know who else could be capable of doing that.
Mm. And what would you say, how important is the role of a kid in this designing process? Because when we look at nowadays playgrounds, I sometimes have the feeling that they forget that it's actually for kids and then they have like a lot of imagination. So can or should, in your opinion, kids be integrated in this designing process?
I think there is definitely a need for conversation with children in terms of like having a conversation about what the playground means to them and what they imagine for a playground to be. I'm not very experienced, or I never did workshops with children myself on designing playgrounds, so I cannot really speak to that extent, but I think it's definitely, it should be a partner for a conversation with the child in this process. And I don't know also in which form and to which extent, but I think it's also very helpful for a designer to have a conversation with children before they even start to think about it, because it can be a very inspiring process to understand what these spaces mean to children in general. And in that sense, I also did a research on Marta Mucho observations in Hamburg, and she did a streetscape observations in a city of Hamburg in 1940s. And she had a fascinating research on that she conducted with children and conversation with children and how they play in a city and how they appropriate different city locations. So yeah, I feel like the role of a designer is almost like today, like this psychologist, sociologist, mediator that has to communicate with a child in some shape or form.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, you already mentioned that playgrounds nowadays looks a bit different than Aldo from Eich's playgrounds. What did you experience by observing the nowadays playgrounds? What's the difference?
What I focus in my observations on is often, it's like it's almost with every playground, when you sit down and you watch it for like 20 or 30 minutes, you see a lot of theater going on. And I'm often interested to observe how children use play elements, if they use them the way they were designed, or if they find the new ways of almost misusing their design or inventing new ways to play with them. And I also pay a lot of attention of how much time children spend on which type of play elements, because I think it's a quite a telling thing. Because when it comes to slides, I often see that children really rush and run into slides, but they slide twice or three times and then they are almost bored and they look for another activity, but it's not something they would come back to. But it is an element that attracts them and they run into. But when it comes to sandpits, I feel like they are capable of spending there a lot of time, and then it depends on how large is the sandpit, how much they can even socialize with other children or play games with other children. So yeah, I mean, to me, it's a lot about how much time children spend on each play element and what they and how they use it or how they appropriate it or how they play with it.
And when it comes to material, what's your experience with the situations you explain right now?
Well, my experience is that plastic is very present in the designs of play elements, whether it's recycled plastic or whether it's plastic like pure non-recycled, it doesn't matter. But to me, it's kind of a one-dimensional material that is used pretty often today. And I feel like we are not really training children, therefore, to sensually experience their different surfaces. And even if we are in the digital era and we are already touching only smooth surfaces of our screens and phones, I think it's still quite necessary for children to explore the tacit knowledge of their fingers and touching, and that's something that the playground should and could explore much more in their designs, I feel.
I think maybe this using plastic and whatsoever, it's also a result of, I think Madison Motor said this during the Bauhaus Dessau Foundation study rooms, quite exactly by saying that we build more from the perspective of efficiency, like quick, cheap, and dirty, and so that's why playgrounds look like plastic houses and whatsoever, and rather than working with wood or whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's really different, like country by country. I also cannot really claim that it's completely tragic, the situation, because the materiality changes also from country to country what they use.
Yeah, this brings me to another question. So do you have any good example for nowadays playgrounds?
I have to say that I'm quite amazed always when walking in Berlin, because I experience walking through different playgrounds in different, dominantly in European cities. I haven't been anywhere out of Europe myself to observe that. But in European cities, I feel like Berlin has quite a diverse typology of playgrounds. And also from playground to playground, you have this almost like craft-like uniqueness of each location, that it almost feels like it's done in the neighborhood by some neighborhood communities. I mean, I didn't do so much research on that, but you can already feel it when walking in Berlin. So I wouldn't be able to identify authors in Berlin, but it feels more like this kind of community playgrounds that are always different. And then, of course, in Scandinavia, there are some better examples, maybe also because they quite integrate in their designs of playgrounds as well, this idea of designing for all generations. So in Denmark, they are very much forward with thinking about playgrounds for adults or playgrounds for all generations. Yeah, and then, I mean, what is a bit dangerous, what I observe, is that there are these catalog playgrounds that are from the companies from Finland, sometimes from America or Australian companies, and they are basically worldwide spread somehow, and they just repeat from one to another.
Can you give us an imagination on this playgrounds you mentioned, like the catalog playgrounds? How do they look like?
It's often like some kind of a Disney-like, very colorful reproductions of fairy tale worlds. Often they are thematic in terms of, and sometimes these thematics are also politically quite wrong, like they sometimes even represent safari or, okay, pirates, or sometimes it's just like some kind of a industrial factory setting, or sometimes it's a setting of, they are often like representing some kind of a houses. It's often a house with some kind of different color code and then slides, and then very few elements that would serve some imagination, but rather prescribe how you should play. And often they include animals in weird proportions and sizes. I mean, sometimes it's even interesting because there is this Danish company, Monstrum, which is actually very nice, and they produce the wooden playgrounds out of scale. So sometimes they make some kind of animal that is out of proportion, so it's quite large. So you, even if as a child or adult approach it, you don't know what it is first. And maybe from the top, from the plane, you could see that it's a mouse or something. But when you are next to it, I like the fact that it's out of proportion. You cannot recognize it. But with the catalog playgrounds, they are often animals in a sizes that suggest that you should dominate them, or that you should sit on elephant, or you should like sit on a horse, or sit on a chicken. Like, and that I have a bit of a problem with, that we are also educating through that somehow.
Yeah, I can totally agree with that. But can you name us some inspiring designers who are doing good work in this field?
I think, as I already mentioned, Monstrum would be the one that I just mentioned. And for the others, I just actually wanted to look up, because I don't know them all by heart, but I came across some interesting research recently in Portugal, and the design studio is called Boxing Boxes, and they made a typologically similar playground as Aldo van Eyck in terms of the materiality and these aluminium bars, even though they are maybe steel. But it's on my Instagram, and it's called Boxing Boxes. And I often like publish on my Instagram new designers and or artists, actually. It's often also artists that design for children, and I come across. But it's more of individual cases that go one by one. I'm not like following some kind of a specific designer or... I also feel like a part of Monstrum, I don't know any of a bigger company that would be super doing something new and revolutionary in that means.
Okay, that sounds really good. I will definitely look them up. As we have this degree, Design of Playing and Learning, many of students here are thinking about how to design playgrounds. So maybe do you have an advice for us what we have to think of when it comes to designing playgrounds?
Personally, I also never designed a playground myself, but I think to look for inspiration for playgrounds, maybe you have to go sometimes, I would say more often I would personally go to theater or arts itself, like, and try to understand how you could translate other art forms into playground, because I think it's quite telling. And if you can make a playground as an art installation, or think of it in these terms somehow, but still make it approachable and used for children, I think it's a great way to go. But I also definitely think there is a lot of need for conversing with children on this subject, that I wouldn't be also the one to give a full recipe. But yeah, I mean, each of a designer, I hope, goes back to his own childhood when designing one playground and tries to recall back what he found fascinating in that age. But to me, it's things like thinking about scale, pretty much. It's very important. And what does scale do to children? Because they are already in a different scale than adults. So how they perceive objects, it's quite interesting in terms of scale. And also how much space is there in between elements, not just elements themselves, because this is something what Aldo van Eyck paid attention to as well, because he quite understood that child has to run a lot, so he has to have this space around the elements that would be quite wide for him or her to run around. So that's quite necessary. The playground has to kind of breathe, you would say.
I think these are actually really great advices. Thank you very much. When I think about my childhood, I would also say that exploration is really important, so that I can go under something or above something. And this sculpture you mentioned from Aldo van Eyck, or this mountain, this climbing mountain, sounds really interesting to me. But thank you very much, Denisa. I think it was a really inspiring input you're giving me and the others to playgrounds and your research. And it's also, I think you show very well that it's also a very necessary topic for everybody, like citizens and designers and architects and research and kids as well. You already mentioned your Instagram account, so maybe you can tell us before we end this interview where people can get some more information about your research and also the book you mentioned.
Actually, we have a website that we made together with Anna van Linen called like www.17playgrounds.com. And on the website, we try to map all the Aldo van Eyck playgrounds that are still intact in Amsterdam and also changes they go through. So people can contact us through this website, or we have Instagram called 17.playgrounds. And there we map more of contemporary landscape of playgrounds all around the places we happen to be at the moment. So yeah, people can contact me this way. I think that would be the road to go.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Denisa, for being part of this podcast. And take care.
Thank you very much, Verena. It was nice.
BurgstudentInnen treffen auf spannende Persönlichkeiten im Rahmen der Bauhaus Study Rooms Dessau.
Burg Students Podcast Edition.
Bauhaus Study Rooms. Today with